Welcome to Whacker Slaps, where we look back into the annals of 2000s indie music to determine if an album or a band or even an entire musical movement was actually good or just the product of the hype machine of its time. Like all great podcasts, this is a direct spinoff of an unhinged group text that simply refuses to die. All right, I'm joined by the Kraut Rocker himself.
I'm Adrian, your producer, Cosmish. And I'm going to bring one back. Just give me indie rock.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Yes, and I am your co-host, Noah. Guten Tag.
Yeah.
Today, I should say, we're doing things a little bit differently. We do things a little differently here on this podcast. I don't know if you guys have caught on to that yet, but... today we have a Whacker Slaps classic episode. Mm-hmm. So we're going to look back into the annals of all musical history today.
Yes, going back to the cavemen.
Yes. Banging on rocks. What episode is this, Adrian? Episode
It's double 55. Nickels, baby. 55.
Double nickels on the dime.
Yeah.
We should have done that episode.
Oh, shit. That would have been good.
That album. We'll get around to it.
All 60 cuts or whatever it is.
What year did that album come out?
Shit, was it 84? I believe
I think
it
is 84.
84. It's another big one. I'm sure we'll get to it.
We blew it.
Yeah, classic.
Oh, well. But episode 55, of course, double nickels on the dime. The Red Rocker, I Can't Drive 55.
Sammy himself.
Which I believe the... Minutemen album Double Nickels on the Dime is kind of making fun of that song.
Yeah, it's a reference to that. They're like, fuck you, you can't drive 55, we're doing 55 on the dime, bitch. Sammy Hagar was spotted in Santa Maria.
Supposedly
allegedly.
There's an old legend of our buddy Edward said he was a little kid. I think he was actually in my dad's car with my brother. He's like, dude, I just saw Sammy Hagar. He's in a Corvette. And he said he had like a guitar in the passenger seat or something.
God. Does Sammy even play his, I don't even know. Does he know?
Yeah, I think he does. In his other band, was it Montross or whatever?
Yeah, maybe. I feel like he's one of those guys that just picks up an acoustic every couple numbers and is like,
yeah,
you know, strums along a couple chords. Anyhow.
There's a lot of guys with the Hagar look. The curly hair and the big curly goatee.
The Venn diagram of men with curly hair and Corvettes, that's almost a circle.
How do you feel about Sammy Hagar? I don't think I have ever really listened to Sammy Hagar era Van Halen.
I think there's a couple of tracks that I was like, these are actually surprisingly pretty good. But yeah, I mostly stuck with the Diamond Dave era.
Yeah.
Speaking of another 1984 album, famously. 1984.
Which one? Oh, yeah. 84. Is that the one with like the little kid like smoking a cigarette on it?
Yeah, I think so. It's the one with like, it's the big hit one, right? I think.
Yeah, I guess they're
all kind of hits, but you know,
Halen 2.
Monster one in the 80s.
Yeah. What's the one with the cannonball? Guy's getting like a cannonball shot in his belly. I think that's Van Halen 2. Maybe.
That's pretty good.
I don't know. Anyways, we're not talking about Van Halen. Today, 55. Though, on the podcast, we do have a 1984 album for you.
Yes.
It's going to be the Whackers.
We'll get to it, but 84, but a couple of years removed from the time.
We're going to try this year to do some anniversary albums like we've done in the past.
Thematic.
So we'll probably do. Yeah. We'll probably do a couple of these, but our first one is from 1984, so 40 years ago today, actually. No, actually, I don't know that.
Pretty close in terms of like the date of recording, but I don't know. I couldn't actually lock down exactly when it was released in 84, so it could potentially be today. You never know.
But today on the podcast, we are doing the seminal album by Manuel Gottsching.
Nice.
We'll have to work on that pronunciation.
We'll just call him Manny.
The album is E2 E4, E2-E4 from 1984, 40 years ago, Manuel Gottschalk.
Yeah.
It's your move, E2 to E4, of course.
Which is, of course, as we all know, the most famous opening and most widely used opening move in chess.
Yeah, it's like the middle pawn to the middle square.
Yes, it's literally, if you saw a chart, it's pretty, it's just one pawn up a couple of squares. Yeah. But we should probably get into a little bit of what was this guy's deal?
Yeah, Manuel Gottschalk. Adrian, what was this guy's deal? I never heard of this fucking guy.
So, are you familiar?
I'm just joking.
well, I'm sure as Caleb is and many of our friends, we are all fans of krautrock, which was a big time scene coming out of Germany in the 1970s. You got bands like Can, you got Neu, you got Kraftwerk, you got Early Tangerine Dream, you got all these other bands that are coming out. And one of them was this guy's band, Manuel Gottschalk, with his pal Klaus Schulze and some others. It was called Ash Ra Temple. And they were kind of this, you know, psychedelic, but with like kind of a hypnotic beats sort of thing, which was, you know, krautrock was all about that kind of motoric beat.
Weirdo Germans.
Yeah, weirdo Germans. Going back even further, I think that specifically Manuel Gottschalk comes from a long line of Berlin artists, you know, going back to the 20s, the Bauhaus, the, you know, in terms of like art and architecture and music, you know, cabaret and all these things, I think have a through line straight to like kind of the electronic music scene and what these guys were doing back in the 70s with synths and gongs and shit. But, you know, they were kind of known for like these really long songs, you know, kind of improvisatory jams, you know,
like a jazz quality to it.
Yes, and free jazz was actually a big influence on a lot of these bands, just not necessarily in terms of sound, but in terms of like the idea that it can be, you can free yourself from the rules and still work your music the way you want.
The unifying krautrock distinction is sort of going for this hypnotic kind of repetitivism, sort of.
Yes, exactly. It's kind of like a locked in groove. Draws you
most
in.
Most of the time.
Sometimes
there's some weird, just freak out stuff, but.
Sure. But they're always building on, you know, kind of this core jam, you know, kind of groove, right? And then they build on that and they build it up and then break it down. And and then sometimes it gets into real freak out territory.
Yeah.
And certainly
Krautrock
Temple
albums,
was a band that did that. Go ahead. Sorry.
Most krautrock albums are like one piece almost. Like each song goes into the next. It's not really just like song, song, song. It's more like a movement.
Yeah, exactly. And similarly to ambient music too, where there's like, you know, it could be one full piece that's spread out over four tracks of a record or whatever, or eight tracks, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of where this guy's coming out of. He specifically, after Ash Ra Temple disintegrated, he started doing kind of these compositions and guitar compositions and then later synth compositions, and released a few things under his own name as well as under the name Ashra with some other musicians. But he was, you know, a guy that was super into collecting gear, building his records, you know, his recording studio out. And this record is kind of the result of a lot of years of putting in the time and the money and just sweating it out and gigs to get to this point where he can release this record. And we'll get to how crazy the story is, or not, maybe not crazy, but how it's one of these things where it's like a mythical story surrounding a really great record. And so maybe that's a good segue to get into the background here.
A krautrocker, his deal, Manny Gottschalk. We'll call him Manny Chiching. Because this thing paid off big time. But he's basically a krautrocker turned electronic music pioneer, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, if you wanted to break it down like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Do we hear a review of this historic album, E2-E4?
Yes. So this was luckily reviewed by Pitchfork, I believe back in 2016. They gave it a 9.2, which is pretty good. They got a it did get a Best New Music under the Best New Reissue designation, because this was reissued under, I want to say it was reissued by Gotching himself, but I'm not positive on that.
I didn't know there was a reissue on that. Maybe I'll try to buy
Yeah,
it.
so that's kind of why it kind of got brought back into the kind of like conversation, I think, a little bit when that got released. But this review is by Mark Richardson, who is one of their big time writers over there, big time editors, long time Pitchfork guy, which, rest in peace, Pitchfork.
Oh,
Don't have to
yeah.
necessarily get into that, but it's a damn shame what's going on in the world of journalism, specifically
Journalism.
music journalism. Like, everything seems to be disintegrating, and it's really unfortunate for the fans and anyone that's interested in music. Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, everything's owned by like three things.
Yeah, it's bleak, but hopefully there'll still be ways for writers and artists and people to get their stuff out there in a way that we can get them paid. So anyhow, I have an excerpt here, and it does a pretty good job, I think, of covering a lot of what we're probably going to talk about. But here we go. Some classic albums have origin stories that threaten to eclipse the music itself. My Bloody Valentine almost bankrupted with Creation over Loveless. Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska was just a cassette demo that he carried around in his pocket before deciding to release it. Brian Wilson's inability to finish Smile caused him a mental breakdown. Add to these E2, E4, the marvelous extended electronic work by Manuel Gutching, former leader of the key krautrock band Ashra Temple. After the dissolution of Ashra Temple in the mid-1970s, Gutching began working solo as Ashra, moving away from his earlier band's woolly psychedelic rock and towards structures based on ambience and his interest in Terry Riley-style minimalism. Both the trance-inducing repetition of 1975's Inventions for Electric Guitar and the softer drones of 1976's New Age of Earth showed his mastery of these forms, and he would build on them. In December 1981, having just returned from a tour with his friend Klaus Schulze, Gottsching was alone in his home studio and decided to create an improvised piece as an exercise, and also to give himself a tape to listen to on an upcoming trip. Moving between his battery of synthesizers and sequencing devices, he settled on a gentle two-chord vamp on his Prophet 10, to which he added an array of pinging electronic percussion and simple melodic figures. And over the second half of the piece, he laid down an extended guitar solo. Cut live without overdubs in a single hour, E2 E4 became, upon its eventual release in 1984, an electronic music landmark.
That's kind
Which
of
is.
funny, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
I was saying it's kind of funny. He's like, oh, I gotta go on this road trip. He's looking through his like cassette collection. He's
Yeah,
like,
he's like,
fuck, none of this is
none of this hits anymore. I need some
yeah.
juice.
I gotta make my own little, and it is a perfect like road trip type of album for sure.
It is, as Caleb will get into a bit when we hear from him and sh shortly, but it works when you're moving, when you're being transported
Yes,
somewhere.
definitely.
But so yeah, it's a remarkable piece of music. It's a remarkable piece of work, because it's just like, yeah, he basically was like, I got this thing, this upcoming trip. But yeah, I don't think it necessarily was so much that he wanted something to listen to for his own pleasure or whatever. I think it partially that, but also I think he wanted to just jam out some ideas, because he was gonna head over to, I think, Hamburg. I don't, it's in my notes here. We'll get into that, but to work with Schulze. So I think he might have been like, I got some ideas I want to kick around. Let me listen to this on the plane, and then when we get there, we can, flesh them out or whatever. But it ended up being this kind of fluke thing where he recorded it, and boom, magic happens, and it's like this kind of one and done piece of like electronic music mastery, just really incredible. But I don't know. Did you have anything to add before I get fully into the background here?
Yeah, let's get into some background of this thing.
Okay, so as mentioned, E2 E4 was recorded on December 12th, 1981. It was performed, recorded, and produced by Manuel Gottsching in his home studio, Studio Roma in Berlin, using a sequencer, synthesizers, and improvised keyboard, percussion, and guitar. It was recorded in 1 hour-long take to two-track recorder. So yeah, so he basically had his own kind of mothership synth station with sequencers and that he had built out, with, and then he had his guitars and such. So he just had all this stuff, and he set it all up, and then boom, he sits down and plops out this thing in 1 fucking hour, and
Yeah, it's
it's
wild. So
remarkable.
it's almost like recorded in real time, but I mean, I'm sure he was
it
going
is, I
over.
mean, it literally is recorded in real time. There's no overdubs. There's no, you know, I think maybe he did some fading in the beginning, like the intro and the outro. But other than that, I think that it's completely just as it was recorded, which is remarkable. But as we'll get into here, he had spent years getting to this point. So it was a
Imagine if
really,
he did all that and then like the tape fucked up and nothing
really
got.
well, I watched an interview with him from the Red Bull Academy, which I don't know if you've ever watched some of those, but those
Yeah,
interviews tend to be
time to
pretty
time.
good.
They're good, yeah.
Yeah, they go a little bit more in depth into the music geek stuff. There's one with MF Doom that's kind of a classic, and some others. It's always interesting to hear from musicians and producers and stuff. But he talked about how he was talking about that, and sorry, what did you?
Oh, if the tape didn't record
Oh
or
yeah. So he was
something.
talking about how like he yeah. So he would like. You know, the only way to do it was basically to record like a 20, you know, he was talking about his the guitar record, the Inventions for Electric Guitar, but
Yeah.
basically he would have like a 20-minute track that he would lay down in real time, and he was like, yeah, you know, if I have an itch at 18 minutes, then I have to start all over again from the beginning. And it's like, yeah, that's really how they had to do it. It's not like now or you can get into Pro
Cut and
Tools or
paste,
any DAW, you know, and just cut paste whatever mistake, you know, or even fix it with AI nowadays. So
You wouldn't really think that the way the style that this guy plays guitar either, because it doesn't sound like it's so precise sounding. He doesn't like leave himself room, like, okay, this will just be like a noisy part where I can kind of catch my breath or like a reverby part. He's hitting like complicated little notes and runs the whole time.
it's
It sounds
super melodic.
so clean for something that is, you know, seemingly improvised as well. It matches. It strikes the balance between sounding very technical, but then once you hear that it's recorded in one, it does have that spontaneity that you would think
Yeah.
as for something that was recorded in just one shot.
Well, I think that's why it stayed relevant and it's become, you know, it stood the test of time is because it's kind of this perfect meeting of man and machine. Like, you know, you get both elements. It's almost like even the machines start to feel like more human, and then his guitar work starts to feel more robotic because he starts getting into some hypnotic things towards the end. But it's an interesting balance, and he really is like a master of playing all the, you know, playing the studio, basically playing his equipment as kind of his own band or whatever, a one-man band. But the album was originally released by Klaus Schulze, I believe it's Schulze. I'm just gonna say Schulze from now on,
Schultz,
who it was Gotching's bandmate in Oshawa Temple, was also a member of Tangerine Dream, and you know, just an acclaimed and influential guy in his own right. But it was released on his label Inteam in 1984, and it is Manuel Gotching's second solo album that is released under his name. He released numerous other records, both solo and with other people under the name Ashra, under other kind of pseudonyms and band names. But this is his second solo album under his name. Gotching had been experimenting with solo improvisation following his time as a member of Oshawa Temple. He'd wanted to move away from mostly guitar-based music. So he started to work with synths and collecting a bunch of different things, you know, Arp synthesizers, Moogs, and all kinds of, you know, the stuff that was coming out in the 70s. And as well as recording equipment. And he said of that time, there were 5, 6, 7 years between Inventions for Electric Guitar and E2, E4, and a lot of things happened in between. The next step after Inventions was that I didn't want guitar sounds. I always want something new. I do something only once, and when I'm happy with it, I don't want to repeat it. So just with even with that mentality, it's kind of designed for this, you know, this sort of recording style where it's like one and done. But he'd been asked by a friend to provide some music for multimedia-based fashion shows, which involved like films and projections and you know the models and things and especially electronic music, which was avant-garde at the time, you know, and always fashion and art and all the avant-garde always seemed to go hand in hand. But So he kind of developed those solo
Yeah,
improvisations, kind of doing those.
what music got played on the runways before kind of techno and
Right.
electronic?
I don't know. I
That's
guess
all that
jazz,
gets
maybe?
played
Who
now.
knows?
Yeah.
Or like chamber music?
Like
Who fuck knows?
classical, I guess.
Yeah, right. So yeah, so that helped him develop his improv skills, because he's there for an hour, 80 minutes, 90 minutes to do, these solo performances. And he's really just up there with his sequencers, his synths, and his keyboards. And so he was already practicing for this, unknowingly before he sat down to record. It's not like he was just magic. I think that's one of the things that maybe people imagine or like to think, is that like you're struck by some shock of creativity, and then you sit down and a call comes out, and it's like no, you got to work to that. Like it's a muscle you build, and he had developed this over time, both in bands and as on his own. So following an improvisational tour in 1981 with Schulz, the duo planned to reconnect in Hamburg after they got back to Berlin. And so the day before he was going to leave, as we've been talking about, he decided to sit down in his studio and record some music to listen to on the airplane, which resulted in this record. He said, "I just recorded it in the same way as I have recorded over the years many, many times. But this time, somehow, it was something special, and it worked with no technical problems, no crackles. In fact, I didn't intend to record a new album. It was just a session, and I recorded just on a two-track machine. In the beginning, the rhythm was somehow different from what I tried, so I nearly wanted to stop it, but somehow I said, no, let's see what happens." So there you go. He did consider stopping the tape for a second. "I'm lucky today. It was very relaxed, and maybe this is what it sounds like. But in fact, it was some years' work to come to this point and some years' experimental training and performances. It was just a great moment. I wanted to play, and so I did it in the same way I did many sessions in my studio before. I had many recordings of 30 minutes. Sometimes it's only 10 minutes and something was happening and I stopped it. This one just worked for 1 hour. I didn't change anything afterwards. I didn't do any overdubs. I didn't do any edits. I didn't change anything, not even equalizing or something like that. I just left it as it was. I was a bit surprised, actually, when I finished, and then I said, 'Oops, what was this?' I listened to it and thought, 'This is quite perfect.' So even he himself was like, 'Whoa, what the fuck? Like, I just made a perfection somehow.' Like,
Would have been cool at the very end. You hear him like take a sigh of like,
yeah,
like
like,
set down his guitar. It's like,
like, yeah, nailed it.
nailed it.
But to continue on here, Gottsching was signed to Virgin Records at this time. And so he had a bunch of friends listen to it, and they are like, obviously they're like, "This is fucking great. Like, you got to put it out." So he considered it, but ultimately he decided not to release it on Virgin at the time, because he thought it'd be forgotten, put in a corner, wouldn't be marketed, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, I mean, it's a weird record, right? It's an hour long single song, essentially. There's really
Yeah.
no discernible like pop
No
elements,
single,
no
yeah.
single or anything. Yeah. And that it's not like dance music at this time was like, it might make sense 5, 10 years later, but maybe even 5 years later, when dance music has become a thing. But at this point, it's just too weird, too out there for a mainstream release. So he holds on to it, but he does tell this story where he played it for Richard Branson on his houseboat, and Branson was holding on to his newborn baby in his arms, and the baby was falling asleep while the record was playing. And so Branson quipped, "You can make a fortune with this record." And so that kind of shows you the power of this thing, because it is kind of super hypnotic, but it's in a gentle way. It's not like overwhelming ever. But yeah, so ultimately he decided to hold on to this, and it wasn't until Schulz came to him, years later, that with this idea, like, "I want to make a record label just to put out stuff by us and our friends. Do you have anything for me?" And so he's like, "Oh yeah, I got this tape from, 81 or whatever. Here you go. Why not? It'd probably do better on your small label anyways." So the title itself had been thought up before it was recorded. So he had the title before he even sat down to do anything. But the title came out of a few things. He said, first, obviously, it's from the chess move, which is the most commonly used chess move. Opening chess move, but also it was from writing code, because at the time he was using those early sort of like Apples and Commodore 64s and things like that, early computers, to sequence things and make graphic apps and things like that. So he was inspired by the names and abbreviations that are used there. So there's a lot of like, yeah, A6 to 12, you know, E12 and code and hexes and things like that. So,
nice.
And abbreviations. And then a funny inspiration was that he liked the name R2-D2 from Star Wars. He thought like, oh, that's cool. It's a nice, like kind of alliterative nature of it or something like that. And so once he recorded it, he's like, oh, this title works with this kind of thematically in terms of like, you know, logic and the way that the percussion works and whatever. It's very robotic. And so it makes sense in a kind of abstract way to connect it to chess. And so that they do the album cover, which is like the classic chess board, and it's you know, and they put it out. And he talks about how when it was initially released, people were like, I don't what the fuck is this? I don't know. It's good. Like, you should be doing stuff like Depeche Mode. Like, that's the electronic music of right now, because like what you're doing is already passé. Like, that's like 70s experimental stuff. Like, we don't really get this. But luckily, DJs and producers at the time picked it up and were like, obviously saw that it's this remarkable piece of work. So guys like Larry Levon, who is one of the all-time famous DJs, would play it in its entirety at Paradise Garage, which is the all-time classic and New York club. And he also reportedly wanted it to be played at his funeral. And that's high praise right there. I don't know if that actually happened, but I like to think it did, because it does have a sort of elegiac kind of quality to it as well, you know?
Yeah. This album is great if you're like a lazy DJ. Be like, all right.
just throw it on.
Acting like you're DJing for an hour straight, but you just have this one song playing.
Yeah, I mean, it moves enough and changes enough that you could totally pull that off.
It's like, I'm going to go take a poke break for an hour, throw this on.
And no one would care. No one would mind, because it's great. Gotching himself was unaware of the kind of developing cult around it until later, when DJs started to come to him and were like, hey, we want to remix this. We want to do our own version of this track. And so when he found that out, he was sort of like, whoa, what the hell? And you know, he heard the boot. Someone played him the bootleg remixes of the song and stuff. And so he was like, you know, blown away that all this stuff was going on. He said, I couldn't believe it. I thought, it's not produced as dance music. This is not heavy bass drum. This is, of course, rhythm and this floating feeling. And yes, you can maybe dance to it, but I wouldn't imagine. So kind of classic German, like, you're dancing to this music? Like, that's crazy.
Like, this is serious business.
Well, I don't know if it was necessarily that, but I think he just like, it's, what do you mean? It's robot dance, like robot rhythms. Like, what's going on? But of course it was presaging a whole, you know, whole genres of music that would come. And of course DJs loved it. So, one famous, group, the Italo House DJ band, Italo House band, whatever you want to say, Sueño Latino. They came to him and were like, we want to remix it. And so they did, and it became sort of a minor dance hit in Europe, but it became a kind of an all-time classic of the genre, and sort of one of those tracks that, you know, other producers hear and are instantly inspired to go, you know, go out and buy some Roland beatboxes and some fucking synthesizers and do their own thing. And then Gotching himself worked with them on one version of the remix that it actually sounds really good.
Nice.
You check that out if you do dig this record, because that's a nice little follow-up listen. But so the album did ultimately find acclaim, and it earned its recognition for, you know, its role and in the development of techno and house music. So many producers cited it as an inspiration, and especially some of those early kind of really important guys coming out of Detroit, coming out of Chicago, artists like The Orb, Carl Craig, The Black Dog, you know, these kind of big time artists of electronic dance music, ambient music, ambient dance music, whatever. But speaking about its relevance at that Red Bull Academy interview in 2018, Gotching said, for me, it was just a reflection of the state of the time, what was possible. That's how I played with different analog equipment sequencers. That's how I used it, how I played it, my minimal influences. When I compose and when I record, I don't think about how to call it or what might or what might be the audience. Of course, I have my experience, so I know in what direction it could go, but there was no intention like that. So of course, I just accepted it and I thought, yeah, it's kind of a transition from the so-called classic minimalism from the end of the 60s until the techno time, or however you may call it, modern electronics. E2, E4 is a kind of bridge in between. That's what I think. So he recognized and he realized that he did do, you know, he did kind of make this sort of archetypical record here that became heavily influential, and if not in terms of sound, but certainly in terms of motivation, in terms of feeling, and the idea of the producer using the, you know, the equipment to its full extent. But sadly, Gottsching passed away not too long ago, on December 4th, 2022, at the age of 70.
So, damn.
There you have it. But he did release a lot of music. He was pretty prolific for most of his life. And yeah, he was always out there doing the thing, man.
He's a G.
Yep, that's right.
All right. What's next? Do we have a voicemail?
We do. Should we hear from Caleb before we get into our own?
Yeah, we'll hear Caleb, our erstwhile host. He phoned in a review. He's really been phoning it in lately, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
But let's see what he has to say of this album. He's a big krautrock dude.
Yeah, he's a big fan of the genre, but he'll get into that. So let's hear a little bit from Caleb.
Guten Tag.
There it is.
Hosts. And our loyal listeners, how's y'all doing? This is, of course, Caleb out here doing the damn parental thing, still on an indefinite leave. I feel weird even calling myself a host, considering that I have not been doing that for a very long time. I'm basically an absentee parent to the show, you know, a deadbeat host. Not proud of it, but yeah, thought I'd call in all the same and share my thoughts about today's ep, which apparently is a classics episode. Very cool, very cool. E2 4 2, however you say it, by Manuel Gottsching.
Almost
got E2 E4.
Yeah, what can you really say about this album? I guess I'll need to back up and, you know, kind of confess that I'm a bit of what you might call a Tatonophile or a Germanophile, you know, like a Francophile or Anglophile, but for German shit. that doesn't sound great. I'm sure they've had a lot of kooky ideas throughout history and continue to have some really kooky ideas these days about international solidarity, oppressed people, foreigners, that kind of thing. Yeah, that's unfortunate. But however, the post-World War II Germany is what I'm talking about here, baby. With, you know, new German cinema, with Kammermusik music, you have your nascent electronic and experimental music. So that whole niche of history is something I'm really, really into. Something I think is some of the best shit that's ever been made. Some of the best just like outsider weirdo art that's also just really latched on, you know, had a lot of staying power. It's been very popular for how fucking weird it is and how out there it is. And yeah, it really just speaks to this weird character of the German people. I don't really know. I don't want to get into that. I'm not an anthropologist, but yeah, to just make really prolific art that touches on the human condition in really weird and deep ways is really neat. And, you know, of course, Manuel Gottsching, I don't know how to say that properly. Adrian, put in a correct pronunciation of that for me, please. Thank you. You know, of course, he came out of Ashrock Temple, which is a sick band I've been into for many years. Yeah, they're kind of more on the acid rock, space rock side of the krautrock thing. Still very much krautrock, you know, it's like very repetitive and psychedelic and all that, but definitely kind of grasping for kind of more of a, kind of in the scale of a, you know, Pink Floyd or Hawkwind or something. It has more in common with those bands than you would like say Neuer German Yoke or some, maybe in a Mondul. At any rate, came out of that, and it's like all the dope German musicians of that time, rock musicians, really started to embrace electronics, in the 70s and into the 80s. And just made this amazing album, that's responsible or partially responsible or part of the development of what we know as techno, house, electronic music, minimal dance music, minimal compositional music. Really had a hand in shaping a lot of those different musical movements and genres that really that captivate me personally, and that are also very popular even now, with a whole slew of musicians referencing that stuff now, a bunch of vinyl repressings, whole labels, and a lot just like dedicated to really capturing that huge amount of music that was coming out of Europe at that time. What I really like about this album is it has kind of a punk attitude, not just like being precious and doing that thing where it's like, well, this is actually a punk album, even though it has no guitars. But it's like, in a way it is, though, because it takes a very simple minimalist format and lets that ride out throughout the album, just kind of iterates on top of that and just takes its time, revealing and unraveling this theme, and then just adds all these kind of minimal flourishes throughout, but just builds on top of a very simple beat, a very simple programming and sequencing and everything, and has that kind of reckless abandon and has that experimental heart at the center of it. And, doing it all in one night and just basically setting a program and letting it rock and letting it just kind of create this trance inducing state while adding just a lot of dance worthy beats and textures on top of that. It's something that's really neat. And I think it's just awesome. This album influenced what we would later call Detroit techno or, Chicago house, and those huge musical movements, which have like an indelible, influence on music today. I would probably say you got to give flowers more to the Detroit people in terms of like birthing techno into the world. Your Belleville 3, Juan Atkins, Underground Resistance, just to name a few. That's really who the four people are of that movement, of what we call techno. But this album, along with Kraftwerk, definitely did influence it. And it's really interesting to think how popular techno has become in Europe, continental Europe, especially Germany. But they're really more influenced by those Detroit and Chicago's Midwestern musicians, and they're like super popular over there, and then all these German musicians are referencing them, and then it creates this kind of circle cyclical discourse on influence and music and stuff. So I think that's really neat. But also in the spirit of this album, it's just this like circular piece of music. And I just think it's a really, really amazing album. It's really neat. Shout out to Adrian, kind of told me about it. I'd been an Ashram Temple fan forever, for sure. And then Adrian had mentioned this in an episode, I think. And then I got it on vinyl, listen to it all the time when it's, I need to hack into the mainframe or drive through a tunnel or go on a, some sort of heist or like, sell ketamine late at night. It's perfect for all those things. So thanks, Adrian. Really happy we're doing this album. Really glad to position it as a classic, because it definitely is. It's had such a huge mark on all the awesome music that's being made today. So yeah, those are my thoughts on it. I give it a 10 out of 10. My favorite track is probably, I don't know, the third movement, the third groove in the vinyl. I guess that's a song. Shout out to that song. All right, guys, have a good rest of the episode. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. Thank you, listeners, for dealing with this. Yeah, shout out German music. All right, y'all. Over and out. Guten Tag.
Nailed it. We can cut that down. We'll figure it out.
I think it's all
no,
good.
No, it was good.
But he gets into a lot of stuff that we covered and talked about. But yeah, it's definitely the kind of music that is, it's kind of in the similar vein of like the ambient music definition, right? Of it's as interesting as it is ignorable. It's not quite there as much as ambient music is, but it is. It can you can put it on the background and do things, right? It can be used like that, or you can forefront it and just listen to it in your headphones while you're doing, walking around or whatever, and focus on the music, and that works too.
Yeah, definitely. Like the depending on how closely you're listening to it, the more the layers of it reveal itself.
Yeah, the onion kind of unwraps a bit, right? Like you see
Yeah,
how all of the
exactly.
things sort of populate here because things kind of move in and out. He's bringing in different sequence, different synths and different, different elements. He's working with like weird metallic percussions at different points and introducing weird or odd noises. And then he's also doing things where he's like extending things out. And this is touched upon in the Pitchfork review, but he'll extend something that, in a 4 minute song that would last like 12 seconds or 20 seconds, he's extending this out for like 4 minutes,
Yeah, exactly.
where this little bit just gets repeated and builds on itself and mutated until it becomes something else. And then that flows into something else. And it's really, it's crazy how free flowing this is, considering he's just one guy moving between, essentially probably moving between keyboards and then strapping on a guitar in the back half. It is remarkably fluid, considering he probably had to juggle a lot of stuff to get this going. But as he said, he had years of experience at this point doing this, so pretty cool. Did you want to take a break, or should we just drive right
We can go
into?
into it.
All
I
right, cool.
want to go into our own histories and what we thought of that currently. I could just do my personal history with this album. I don't really have much of one. I never sat down and listened to the whole thing until those last couple weeks leading up to this episode. I think I had first heard of this album actually was probably, I think Pitchfork.com back in the 2000s did like a best of the 80s, like
Oh yeah.
100 albums of the 80s, the original list. I think they went back and revised it in the
Well,
last couple of years.
I think they originally did. I think it was something like they did a songs and then they did an albums list later or something like that.
But this album was on there. And it was always interesting. I was like, I'll get around to that one day. I don't listen to a whole lot of what you would call dance music, but this album's kind of perfect because it's as much sort of ambient kind of soundscapey album as it is a dance album. So it's like it, yeah, you can just be chilling by yourself in a room, or you could be working out listening to it. It's very versatile. Listen, or you could, if you were found yourself in a club and some DJ's playing this, you could dance your ass off to it. So yeah, very versatile. It is like I do need to dive into what Caleb was saying in his voicemail, those Detroit guys and all that type of music. The Juan Atkins and stuff. I
Yeah,
think
there's a
one of those
whole.
guys just died, one of those pioneers of
Oh,
Detroit music.
yeah, who was that?
But yeah,
Anyhow,
that
there's a lot of
whole,
guys like that, and men and women who were pioneers
that
of the
whole
genres.
world of dance music though is it's always waiting there for me. I got to check it out more, like the Yeah, like that Chicago house or trance or the stuff in the 90s, like you mentioned earlier, was like the Orb, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, you're
Because
mentioning
I'm
stuff
sure I'd
that's
like
US
it.
focused. Sorry not to interrupt here, but you're still mentioning stuff that's US focused. You haven't even touched on UK, or let alone the rest of Europe. There's Italo, there's Spanish, there's French, there's all kinds of electronic avenues to dive down. And it's if you want to go more pop, if you want to go more experimental, there's those avenues as well. So it's a
Yeah,
whole
and
universe.
I have recently, last few years, gotten more into like Brian Eno, his ambient albums, the 1 through 4 or whatever it is, the music for airports or music for film. I do like all that. I'm a huge fan of Kraftwerk, so yeah, to hear this album was really kind of scratched an itch for me. It did remind me a lot of like that Stephen Reich album, the music for what is it? Some
Oh, music
24
for
drummers, or I can't remember the number. 16 drummers.
It well, I think it varies depending on what the
What
performance
is,
is, but I think the
yeah.
original is Music for 18.
18 drummers, which I really love that
Yeah,
album. It kind of
something
reminded
like
me of
that.
that. I love
Yes, and sorry, again, he mentions that he's more he that his influences included Steve Reich, Stockhausen. He mentioned, I think we mentioned Terry Riley, but
Yeah, Terry.
these are the guys that these are his guys, you know. Sorry, go ahead.
Terry Riley is somebody I gotta dive into more as well. But I like that experimental kind of minimalist music. I like, did you watch that the Velvet Underground documentary at all? The one
Yeah,
with Todd Haynes?
the Apple Plus exclusive documentary. Yes, I did.
Yeah, I like that how they he tied the thread from, of course, John Cale coming out of that minimalist movement with what's his name, John
Oh,
Cage.
Cage, yes.
Yeah, that kind of noise stuff.
And
So
then
yeah,
using
I've
also
all
using pianos and things that have been
yeah.
experimented with, you know, using odd things for musical purposes, that those sorts of things, experimenting with the
Yeah,
form, experimenting
experimental
with
stuff.
the
Yeah.
instruments. Yeah.
But this album's very experimental and very, of course, important and influential, but it's also very catchy and pleasant to listen to.
It's not homework,
It's
which
very accessible. Yeah. Yeah.
sometimes these
Not
albums can
homework at
be.
all. And
Yeah.
so just on this listen, I really putting on the headphones and listening to this album, walking around a lot, listening to this album is a good for that. And what I like about this album is a lot of like electronic music, I think you could say it's like cold or distancing, but this one really has a real warmth to it. And I think all like the best types of, especially the early synthesizer kind of music and program and drum loops and stuff, there's always like a warmth to it.
Yeah.
And what I really like about this album, especially when you listen to it on the headphone, there's like this bedrock of ambient kind of noise in the background, like this, like a reverberation that goes throughout the whole album that he builds and builds upon. It is kind of funny listening to it as sort of like a proto techno album in a way, because it isn't like traditional dance music that we're accustomed to listening to now. Like you're sort of always waiting for like the beat to drop, but it never really does. It just like builds and builds and builds. Whereas now, that's why probably so many people remixed it, because you can make the beat drop out, or you could add those more, the bass drop and stuff. That's probably why when the Manny Gotching was talking about it, how he was like, oh, I was surprised people were listening to this, like in New York City, like in the garage, that DJs would play it, because it doesn't have the payoff of like a bass drop and stuff that you would expect in more dance oriented music
No, it
at the
doesn't have
time.
those dynamics yet. Like, that wasn't
No.
really a built-in thing yet. Like, that was still yet to be developed
Yeah,
further. I
but
think that
that's
was
what
part of
I,
disco and stuff and funk music, but that wasn't fully developed in dance
yeah, or
music quite yet.
sampling that came later.
I mean, and that comes with the tech and
Like
stuff as
the
it becomes more
break
accessible.
beats. Yeah, like you're always expecting like a break beat sample or something, but but that's what I really liked about it, 'cause it just builds and builds and really takes you on like it feels like a one song kind of journey. And there's always he's always just adding, like as it goes and goes, he adds another layer, another layer. And when I was listening, because I really hadn't had any experience listening to it at all, I was like shocked when the guitar started coming in. I was like, wait a minute. So he starts fucking ripping guitar on the whole back half of this album. That like took this album to like a 10, like over the top for me. And I was like, oh, this album is fucking great. Because at first it could feel like, oh, this is kind of like a little experimental thing, a guy like dicking around on the computer. Or whatever, not a computer, but like messing
Yeah,
around with like
sequencers.
early sequencer coding and stuff like that. It could feel like a experiment more, less so than like a
Yeah, it
album.
literally in the lab. Yeah.
Yeah. But then when he adds that tactile guitar to it, like really, I was like, oh shit, this is like a stone cold classic. And yeah, I love this album. Like, I was just surprised I took me this long to get around to it. And I gotta listen to more. Maybe check out the Asherah Temple. I've heard them, but like Caleb was saying, it's more on the kind of acid rocky side, and I like the more sort of noi type kraut rock, that kind of
The more the kind of
that
the
cleaner sound, kind of, I
yeah the
guess you would say.
hypnosis is dialed up versus the
Yeah.
like kind of like the freaky.
Yeah, but I'll definitely, this will be one of those records that sends me down a road of more krautrock, and also more the early pioneers of techno and house and trance and all that stuff. And it
Hell
made
yeah,
me
dude.
listen to a lot of, go back and listen to a lot of ambient records and stuff that I have listened to over the years too. So yeah, it was just a really rewarding listen. And like you were saying, it's not a homework record at all. It's not like one of those, like, well, I guess I have to listen to that to like fill in a blind spot or something. No,
Right.
it's like pleasant. Like you could have people over for like a dinner party or whatever, and have this going on the background. You know, it's really nice. Yeah.
Totally. It, you know, cocktails on the beach or
Yeah.
something, totally perfect to where the barbecue even.
Yeah.
Which is our always our kind of our
Our
baseline is like,
test.
can we
Yeah.
throw this on at the barbecue?
Yeah, would you get kicked off the, would somebody snatch the aux cord if you put this on?
And no, I think people would like this. This is this goes good with in many moods, many different environments. But cool, that's a nice some nice history there. I similarly, I think to you guys, I also loved krautrock. I think we all kind of probably got into it around the same time and shared those
Yeah.
kind of that lo early love of it. But it's interesting to see how the directions that we all took, because I think, yeah, I think Caleb took it in more of the freaky deaky direction, whereas I took it in more of the bleepy bloopy direction, where I love synthesizers, I love
Yeah,
synthesis.
that was more in the middle, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So, I first heard this record, or at least I heard about it in the early 2010s, I think, sometime around there, maybe to the mid-aughts or mid 2010s, but I was familiar with Asherah Temple and the other krautrock bands we've talked about, Can, Noi, et cetera, et cetera. Especially, I really especially love that early Tangerine Dream stuff,
Oh
which is,
yeah.
you know, very synth heavy, very dreamy, and very atmospheric. But I also, you know, just I've been a general fan of electronic music for a long time. And so when I discovered this, I was like, wow, it really is kind of this missing link thing that it's from 1981. Like that's pretty crazy that early he's kind of presaging everything that was about to hit in, like, you know, 85, pat you know past 85 or so. And so I was really impressed that it was like so future forward and so interesting. And I really did I like the story behind it. I mean, obviously it's not hard not to like fall for a story like that, where it's just this fluke thing of creative genius. But I liked how it was a sort of experimental thing where he's just like, you know what, I'm gonna set up these sequencers. I'm gonna set up my synths to sound like this, and then I'm just gonna go for it. And oh yeah, and then I'm gonna rip the guitar in the last half. I too had that similar experience where I'm like, this is great. I love it. And I think I even maybe knew that the guitar was gonna come in, but then when it starts to like kind of peek in, because again, he does the thing where and this is a dynamic that extends into dance music or electronic music to this day, where, you know, they'll start to tease something really, you know,
Yes.
with just little hints of it, and then it slowly comes in, and then it boom, it hits you. And he starts to do that because there's these little reverby ambient kind of guitar notes coming in through the electronic kind of haze, and then he just drops it in, and it's like jazzy, and it's fluid, and it's melodic, and you're
Yeah,
just
it has
like,
like a smooth jazz quality.
yeah, and it's just this clean guitar, and he's just moving through it, just doing these like figures, and it really, really works. And so that really, again, similarly, that made me fall in love with the record. But listening to it now, I'm like, Jesus, like this thing is so well composed, considering it is kind of a one-off experiment. Like he did take the time to like, okay, I gotta think through how these drums are gonna go, and then what I'm gonna turn off and on, and then what, you know, in what order. And I'm sure he was meticulous about that kind of thing, just that German mentality.
Oh,
But
yeah.
it still feels, at the same time, it still feels loose and improvised, improvisatory because he is that good of a musician, and he leaves room for himself to do things and to make little squelches and to make it not sound.
He's yes anding all over the fucking place.
And it's not like he's just building, because sometimes he retracts, sometimes he pulls things back. There's sections where he starts to flange things, like the whole thing, like he starts to flange the whole sound, and it's almost sounds like kind of gets a dubby kind of effect where he's like playing the studio, right? And it's it's great. And, you know, he's playing with all the things again that would come later in electronic music and dance music, which is, you know, tension, release, you know, the slow build, the teasing out of a few bars and until that builds into the next section or whatever. He's doing all that within the context of this one flowing piece. And, you know, and just also just understanding that, like, this isn't just the result. This isn't the result of like a one-off thing where he's like, oh, I'm just going to try this. It is the result of years of training, quote unquote training, where he's building on everything he learned before, whether it is, 30 minute long takes, or where you only get 10 minutes of usable stuff, or hour long sets for his fashion show pals or whatever. Like, all of that's going into this. And it's a good reminder as a creative person that, you know, you always have to be building that muscle. You always have to be working that muscle in order to get to the next level, in order to really expand yourself, is you got to just keep working it and keep doing it and keep trying new things and keep discovering the new tech and, you know, learning as much as you can, because that's how you become a better artist and a better creator, is just you trying different things. And yeah, it might not always work, but when it does, like in this case, it really, really can work stupendously. And it is this combination of man and machine, which is something that I've always been interested in. You know, I think that's why I'm drawn to like analog synthesis, because it has that warmth to it that still feels kind of almost human, or like a human instrument, but it's not like the digital world, which is also interesting, but digital is much more clean. If you like this, I think you would like Ashra, and especially the record before this one that he made. That especially one track in particular, I think it's called Sun Rain or something like that. It just has this warmth, analog, minimalist synth going, and a basic beat, and it's just it is everything I like about this, of a man meeting machine, of kind of the analog meets the digital in an interesting way. And, you know, it's kind of what I aspire to in my own art, of you know, I always like to bridge that gap between the tactile, the physical, and the digital worlds.
Nice.
So yeah, you know, it's a fucking remarkable record. It's a fantastic listen. You can put it on really anytime and it'll hit. And if you want to just throw it on the background, it works. But if you do throw it on some good headphones, or at least while you're doing something, you know, focused on something else where you can actually kind of let it absorb into you, you do pick up so much, because it's constantly kind of shifting and moving and evolving. You know, even though it's built on this basic, well, not basic, but it's built on this solid base, you know, it's constantly evolving in a way that makes it interesting. And you never really lose like momentum or lose your attention, never loses your attention. It's like, it's kind of a remarkable magic trick that like you can keep going and going and going, and it never, you never get tired. And
it feels like very alive. Like,
yeah,
it feels almost like, cause I listened to it like, I don't know, 6-7 times, like all the way through. Mm-hmm. And each time it almost felt like, wait, is this that, did it change? Like, is it still changing as each time you listen to it?
Yeah, well, because you pick up more, and you pick up like, oh, I didn't notice that little synth thing right there, or I didn't notice he was messing with the boards on this one, or, you know, he was filtering it in a certain way on this one. And this one, I listened to it earlier today, and on that listen, I started to pick up a lot of different, like, that sounds like it's this synth, and that sounds like it's this one, like. They all have these, like, some are a little bit more fizzy, some are a little bit more warm, some are a little bit more, you know, chirpy, some a little bit more buzzy. There's a lot of stuff going on, and he manages it all really remarkably well. It's one of those records that once I heard it, I knew it'd be one of my favorites for you know, the rest of my days, I'm glad that we're exploring it here, because I think it's a record that's gotten its acclaim, but I think more people should hear it, more people should listen to it, because it is so good, and it is such a well thought out piece of art that works in so many different contexts.
Nice. All right. Well, I guess we should hear some of it.
Absolutely.
So we'll get into our wax and our slaps. This is an interesting one because usually, you know, we highlight some songs, but it does feel like one big song. So what I did with mine, I kind of, there's a couple transitions from one song to the next. This album sort of breaks itself up into sections. Like the first three songs are kind of its own section. And then by the fourth song, he's adding additional elements. And well, then there's sort of little pairs. There's like,
it's set up
there's
kind
like
of
a three
suites.
Song suites. Yeah. Suites, I guess you would say it is. But I don't know, Adrian, where do you want to kick it off for a slap? You got a
no,
slapper?
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing, is like, it's kind of hard to, there, what I did was I pulled sections that I thought worked really well. And so I have a whole big list of that, but it's interesting because it's set up one way on the record versus the way it's set up in Spotify. And actually, I think it makes sense the way it's set up in Spotify because it kind of matches where the transitions are. I think it's similar on the LP. We have to ask Caleb since he owns it, but I think it's just some of these are combined a little bit differently. I why don't we start with just the beginning, and you can kind of get a hint of like what
the foundation.
Yeah, because it really is the foundation that everything else is built off of, is this kind
well,
of
actually, so we've been recording for an hour, and usually these things go on for a couple of hours. You just play the whole fucking thing. Just do a live commentary.
Let's just do it. Let's just, here we go. Listen to this. We'll meet up at the end. We'll talk.
We'll do a live commentary.
I mean, we could, you know, literally could do that. This is such a,
we'll be like those record. Gen Z YouTubers that are like reacting to whatever, Jimi Hendrix or
yeah.
Whatever.
If the first time I heard Billy Joel or whatever,
it's like, okay, yeah, who's this guy? He's got a guitar. oh, weird. Okay, what is that little thing that he's doing? I think this whammy bar. Wow, this is cool. It's like no context whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, that sounds sick. So yeah, I think we can just kick it off from the very top, which it takes a second to get it kick in because it's a fade up, but you'll get the idea. I'll let it play for a little longer than we usually do. But I think that's probably the best way to go through this, is just pick the sections that we really like, because it is just one long piece. But here we go. Here is the introduction piece, the very first few seconds of E2, E4.
I don't think I can hear it.
It's coming.
Oh. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, so it's real simple, two chords, nothing crazy.
Yeah, it's like the opening credits to a heist film. See a guy get like a suitcase. It's like checking his watch.
Driving through the city at night.
There's like a stopwatch timing something.
So from that basis, let's go a little bit further. We get the drums in here, but from this is kind of just the foundation for everything that's about to come to follow for the rest of the hour. So here's a little bit more of that.
Boing.
He also takes his time with these things too, like, which is another kind of element that makes it feel more hypnotic, is that like he's not in a rush to get anywhere in particular. He's just like, we're going along, you're gonna come along with me, and it's gonna be just real casual, and we're gonna go through it. But it really works. So did you have a transition, or did you have a few that you liked?
If you could play song three, maybe the last minute, and then it goes into song four, where I think he adds another layer of synths on there.
Yeah. So here's a little bit of
Gets a
that.
little bigger sounding.
It's called, I won't even try to actually pronounce it on here, but
Oh,
there's
I don't
a
even know what that letter is.
right, yeah, it's one of those weird weird A's or whatever. Okay, here we go. Here is a little bit from track three on Spotify, maybe different on your version, but here's a little bit of that transition. So you see how he's bringing in different synth sounds and different things.
Yeah, sort
Things
of
are,
revs it up.
yeah, he revs it up. Other things kind of detract. Like it's very, it evolved in a very organic way.
Yeah, but I love when you're listening to it on your headphones, you can still like underneath it all is just sort of like this kind of hum of, I don't know if it's just the way the sound of the room he was recording in or whatever. There is just this ambient warmth that goes throughout it.
It's yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. It's the equipment he uses. He's recording it to a two-track tape, which tape always sounds nice and warm, and
Yeah.
it really helps bring everything together with in terms of saturation and things. So he and then yeah, and then obviously the whatever his studio setup was, it sounds incredibly warm, and so he really did a good
Yeah.
job of setting this up to sound as good as it can. While he did his thing in here. So let's see, I got a little bit more. Let's try a little bit of track five. Here is I think I can't remember exactly. I think I like some of the synth work in here, but let's see what we got. So this is a little bit from sort of the introduction of track five, intro section on Spotify. Here we go. And then here's a little bit further on, and you can see how things start to evolve and change, and what elements remain the same. So here's a little bit of that. So there he's playing with a kind of weird, I don't even know what to call it, kind
Yeah, it
of,
does have a very droidy kind of
yeah, kind of
R2D2 thing going
metallic
on.
kind of plunks.
Yeah, there's a little plunk. It's
Yeah,
like a
you got
pebble thrown into the digital pond of your mind.
it. Oh, and then the
The
ripples
ripples, baby. Digital
echo out.
ripples. That's my record label, Digital
Digital ripples.
Ripple.
That's pretty good. Okay, I see you have another one here, just the full track. Mittelspiel.
Mittelspiel. I want to say that's when some guitar kicks in, but I can't
Yeah,
remember
let's see. I
what it
think
was about this.
I have some tracks, some parts laid out here. Let's see what we got. Let's try this out. I think you're right. I think this is kind of where the guitar starts to come in. So let me see. Ba, ba, ba. Let's try here. So this is towards sort of the middle of it. And I think this is probably right around, if this is what I'm thinking of. But either way, we'll find out what we got. Here is some of track six, Little spiel on Spotify by Manuel Gotching. Okay, so that
yeah,
was
I think
actually
I
more
like
of the
those kind
organ.
of reverby synth sound.
Yeah, that's why I think that's why I also highlighted that
Yeah,
section was for
those
those
like sort of
musicians.
party synths. Those are like
Yeah.
the throw your hands up, kind of the roof is on fire, the ecstasy is kicking in type synthesizers.
Yeah, which makes sense because it's starting to come in towards the middle here, and that's kind of when you
The
want things
hand,
to start
yeah,
peaking,
the
start
hand
peaking a bit.
raising, lifting your hands. Type sense, yeah.
Yeah, the hand raisers.
Yeah.
Here is a, I think, okay, so let's see if this is where the guitar comes in, because here's some of the next track, track seven, but I think this might be where it is. It's right around this section of the record where it starts to be kind of seeping in, but let's give it a listen. Yeah,
That shit's
so
sick. I
it's
remember just
so
hearing
good.
that for the first time and I was like, wait, what?
It
Like
is
some
a
smooth
revelation.
ass guitar going on.
Yeah, because you're you know, because for I don't know, six tracks, so 30 minutes
Yeah.
basically, for
Just
30,
did not
25
expect
minutes.
it.
Yeah, you're in an electronic zone. You're like, okay, I got a handle on this. I know, okay, you're gonna bring in more synths and stuff, and
I
that's
think I
awesome.
texted you like while I was listening to it, like, wait, what the fuck? This
Yeah.
guy just shreds a guitar.
Yeah, and then he just fucking lays this fluid ass guitar over it. And it's funny because if you listen to like that Oshawa Temple stuff, his guitar work there is very loud and noisy. And then if you listen to Inventions for like Electric Guitar, it's very hypnotic and kind of repetitive. And then here it's like jazzy, it's fluid,
Yeah,
it's
that's
moving over
smooth.
the groove, it's very
Yeah,
smooth.
I love that type of guitar, that really clean sounding guitar.
I do too. I've really grown to appreciate that kind of
Yeah, as I've gotten
jazzy,
older,
mid-toned, just pull back on the tone knob, turn the volume down a little bit so you get that kind of jazzy feel.
a
It's real
little
nice.
funky, but like almost too clean to be like
Yeah,
funky.
exactly. Not enough grit on that one to be funky, but
Yeah.
almost there. And then yeah, it's it really does open up the back half of this record, because then you've got this human element that really connects the rest of it, and it ebbs in and out. I mean, it's always kind of present, but it ebbs in and out with different kind of melodic lines. Sometimes he gets to the more repetitive, noisy parts, and then he gets to like some kind of semi-funky kind of like chords and jazzy chords.
Yeah, he
And
starts like popping his strings a little bit here and there.
He just, again, he's doing different things. He's like, well, what can I do with a guitar now? I can, make it a little bit drony here. I can make it a little bit more echoey here. I can make it a little bit more, play with the ambiance of the room here a little bit.
Yeah, percussion sounding type guitar. Percussive
So
guitar.
yeah, let's hear a little bit more. Let's see. Did you have any another one that you wanted to call out?
I said the
Second to
second
last
to
song.
last song just because I love, he's really fucking wailing on the guitar by then.
Okay, well, I want to play a few more things before we get to the end, between 7 and 12 there. So let's see. Let's try 9. Let's see what we got there. 'Cause yeah, he's going through a lot of different things, a lot of different maneuvers, but it's nevertheless than interesting, and it's often really just super remarkable and great to listen to. So here is a little bit of that from track 9. Yeah, so see, there's some of those chords.
Yeah,
just really clean. Right. Sounds like stuff that would come out of Ibiza in a few years.
It's kind of funny when you listen to snippets of this. If somebody's listening to this who hasn't heard the album, they'll be like, wait, they're just playing the same fucking song.
It's like, well, yes, but no.
What are these guys talking about? All I hear is the same song. But you do have to like hear the build to really like the nuances of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of.
Like the build is the thing. That's yes. why it doesn't really fit for the format that we usually do.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't do it justice. I mean, we're pulling little bits that we like, and if you listen to the record, you'll understand. I think hopefully people will listen to this the record before they listen to the podcast. Yeah. But if not, go back and listen to the whole thing, and then a lot of this will make a whole lot more sense. But I have another little piece here before we get to that second to last song. Let's see what we got. This is track 11, towards the middle. Let's see what he's cooking.
How's that? It's very, like 80s sounding. Like on, he could play on like guitar on like a Don Henley song or something.
Yeah, totally. And also, it reminded me a bit of, interestingly enough, Sade, his band.
Oh yeah, definitely they have a very Sade.
Yeah, they got a very clean jazzy song sound.
Yeah, that's a good pairing. Yeah.
But yeah, we can get to 12 now, which is, as you said, he really starts to rip it. Towards the end here, this is called Souverainitat. It is track 12 on Spotify. Let's try something towards the end.
I didn't mark
here.
Anything, but yeah, I'm sure he's wailing. And I think the last song he still continued to wail.
It goes into the last song, and then the last song kind of starts to fade. He starts to
fade it out,
kind
yeah.
of bring everything down. So we'll play a little bit of that, and then I'll play that last. You can see how he starts to bring everything down, and we can finish it up here. But here's a little bit of that track 12. Let's see if we get some more of the ripping part. Let's see. Let's try some earlier in track 12 before we get into the last one.
There we go.
Like, this wouldn't be out of place in a coffee house, you know what I mean?
No,
like,
no.
Okay, anyhow, you can also hear where he's bringing in some washes of things. Like he's starting to hint, like, okay, we're starting to land here. The landing gear's popping out.
Yeah, you can hear the airplanes descending.
Yeah. Put up your tray tables, gather your electronic gear, make sure everything's stowed away because we're coming in hot. So here we go. Here's the last track. And this is kind of how things start to transition out of the main kind of the main themes here. So here we go. ¶¶
batteries are running out on the synth. It almost sounds like the preloaded track that comes on like a synth. The demo track.
Yeah. Just like when the keyboard starts to play itself or whatever.
I saw something the other day. You know that song Clint Eastwood by the Gorillaz?
Yeah.
So that whole beat is just the demo track on whatever synth that he had.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's often the case.
Like, you can
I think.
Get away with that? Is that just like public domain when that comes?
Well, oh, that's an interesting question. I think it is. I think you are technically allowed to use some. I don't know about for commercial things like that, but yeah, there's a lot of stories like that where, you know, I think famously on one of Aphex Twins, something from that first ambient selected works, I think he famously used the preset. The
presets, yeah. That's what I was thinking of.
Oh, maybe it was even ambient for Saw 2, which is his second ambient works too. But anyways, he used the preset, but it's also just the way you're playing, the way that you're using it. Like, it doesn't, who cares if it's a preset? Like, I used to feel like that too. Like, oh, I can't use a preset. I gotta have my own thing. But like, as long as you can make it sound good and you make it unique to you, who cares? Like, and anyways, getting back to Manny.
The whole album slaps, basically. Yeah. Did you have any wax? That'd be weird.
Like, let me just play the last 20 seconds here.
I hate this
15 second segue here. I hate, but here's sort of how it fades out here. Let me see.
Oh yeah. This could also be the beginning of a song.
Yeah. I mean, it almost has like a kind of a loop feel to it where it's like, okay, it's powering down.
Circular.
But then the beat can just come right back in. Like, why not?
Yeah, right. You could just play it over.
Because it fades down and then it fades right. If you play it again, it'll fade right back into it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's almost as if the song is eternal, right? Because it doesn't necessarily, he didn't stop. It's just, it's fading out. So somewhere out there, that beat, that's, you know, that two chord vamp is still going off into eternity.
That'd be a cool, like museum piece. It's like this two chord thing never stopped playing
the
for
eternal
40
vamp.
Years.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't have any, I mean, no honorable mentions, no skippables, no wax.
Me neither. It's kind of perfect.
It really is like a solid piece of work from 00 to the last fucking second. It is a piece that just works. Like,
so that leads me to my question. What are you going to rate it then?
Okay. I was thinking about this, like, do I give it a 10, right? Is it a 10 just by the sheer fact of like that it is kind of a perfect.
Yeah.
You know,
perfect
confluence of things.
And then you add the historical element and the fact that we were saying like some of the stuff sounds kind of 80s, I guess, but like 80s is always new. You
know, it's always being touched.
Things
on.
Are always being touched upon.
Yeah,
to this day.
They're ripping
so
that shit off. All
it doesn't
of them.
Sound like some synth stuff you listen to and you're like, oh, this sounds very like early days synthesizer. Like,
yes.
You know, like Lori Spiegel or something. I love her, but like,
me too.
It sounds like a scientist kind of like figuring it out or whatever.
Yeah. Someone in a room with a wall of synths and they're, you know, not necessarily in a lab coat, but just about. And, you know, this sounds much more.
Yeah. Like mathematical or something. But since this guy came from a band background, he has that human touch to it.
He brings that jamminess to it that feels that evokes the kind of the, you know, the flesh.
Yeah, for sure. So what do you think? What are you going to give it?
I think it deserves better than a 9.2. I'm going to give it a 9.8.
Ooh, yeah, I thought you were just going to go 10.
No, I can't. I'm not going to go 10.
What do you think prevents it from?
I think what prevents it, I think when I go 10, honestly, what usually pushes over for 10 for me is kind of the connection I have to the record. And
as much
as I love this record and I do feel a strong connection to it, it's not quite like a Trail of Dead or something, right? Where I obviously it's a great record, but on top of that, I have these memories and maybe that's not fair.
The nostalgia factor.
Yeah, exactly. I think I think give it time, this will become one of those records. Because there's plenty of records that are like, you know, we recently celebrated Dilla Day. Donuts is a record like that where it is a perfect 10 record. It's grown into a perfect 10 record for me because of the nostalgia to it. I think this will get there. I think right now it's almost there, but I just need to listen to it a lot more. And I want to listen to it a lot more because it is that damn good. So
I think I'm on the
9-8.
same page as you, Adrian. So yeah, I'll give it a 9-8 too. I was,
Okay.
as we were listening to it and talking about the, I was like, is this just a 10? Because it is so singular and kind of, yeah, it's like a turning point in music. You could kind of, it's one of those albums where a lot came after it.
It's one of those moments, like a pivot moment, even though it was like it was kind of delayed because he did, you know, take his time to release it. I think that once people heard it and everything that followed it, it couldn't like it did have a an impact, you know. And I mean, imagine what it would have happened if it had been released in 81, like how much more impact it would have had. Or maybe not. Maybe it would have just been relegated to the dustbin, like he thought it might have, and we want it would be one of those records that people are discovering in thrift shops or whatever.
Or it's
But
just like a curio record. Kind of
yeah,
reminds me, have you listened to that album? Now it's considered like a cool album. They reissued it. That guy, he made, it's like songs for plants. That
Plantasia or something like that.
Plantasia, yeah, where it's
Yeah.
like, this isn't necessarily even supposed to be enjoyed as an album. It's like
Right.
a
It's like a
project. It's a,
right.
yeah,
It's a piece of art,
piece of
or
art.
it's a yeah, or it's not meant to be enjoyed the way that like a put on or put on the turntable and listen to it kind of record.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But this album does, it has both of those elements where it
Yeah.
feels experimental, but it feels very like a whole piece of the whole album that you can listen to.
And you can digest it either way. You can digest it as a just as a pure enjoyment and a physical, like, you know, physical thing, or as a cerebral thing where you're diving into like the background, you're diving into the way he made it, you're diving into all the technical aspects of it because there's so much richness to it. So yeah,
Yeah, okay.
9.8.
9.8. Maybe
Nice.
one day it'll be a 10.
Yeah, great
Okay.
record.
Yeah, great record. 1 hour. Give yourself an hour. Listen to it. It is one of those like 1,000 albums you should hear once before you die type situation.
Yeah, I'd even throw it. I even say it's probably even you could even call it a top 20 of that, like top 30 easily, just because
The
it's
influential,
so influential in terms of, you know, and it still feels fresh too, is the thing. Like it does hasn't really, like you said, it there's aspects of it that sound connected to the time, but it's just because that's what he had, and it sounds just like the music itself sounds as remarkable today as it would have in 1981 or 1984 or 1994 even.
All right. Well, what happened to this guy? He died.
He passed. He did manage to put out quite a few records in the interim, and there's a lot of interviews with him from the more recent years, from, you know, around probably shortly after this
The
record was
reissue.
reissued, and he started to
Nice.
get more acclaim. So I would say if you have some time, go and YouTube Manuel Gotching. He's a little bit dry. He's very German, but he does have a lot of interesting insights, and it's interesting to hear him talk about the process and how he and his fellow Krautrockers created some of this its most revolutionary music of all time. So
Nice.
there you go.
All right. Final thoughts. It's her fucking rips. It's a slapper.
It's a pure ripper,
Yeah.
indeed.
Adrian, I did have a game for us to play if
Oh,
you'd
okay.
like.
Yeah.
Would you like to play a game?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Do I have to cut off my foot or whatever?
Gotta cut off your dick.
Oh,
You've
shit.
been masturbating too much.
Is that Jigsaw's whole thing? I'm not familiar
I think it
with
is. He like
the.
punishes people just for like little things. I don't know. He's a Puritan piece of shit.
Fucking tricycle ride, motherfucker.
Yeah. But anyways, so I was thinking of solo people that were in bands and
Oh,
then had solo
okay.
records.
Yeah.
So what I'll do, I'll give you the name of the album and you tell me the solo artist
Okay.
or either the artist name or what they went by, like what the project was called. So I'll start off with the easy one here for you. Person pitch.
Well, that would be Panda Bear from one of our favorites.
Yeah, collective. We'll do that album one of these days.
Yeah,
that's probably
actually,
the best Animal Collective album.
Ouch. You know, that's a great record and a good example of
years. I wonder if it holds up.
Yeah, I think it does, but it's a good example of an artist who has gone and done his own thing with his solo records that build on what he's done with his band. Okay. Similarly to Manny over here.
All right, here's another one. Logos. That's the album title.
That's Brad Cox.
Do you remember the name that he went by? His alias?
Is that Atlas Sound? Because I know he did have a couple, I think, under his own name, if I'm not
mistaken.
Yeah,
and then he had like Rainwater Cassettes or something.
Oh yeah. Some kind of weird.
That guy's always making. I feel like they've been kind of quiet recently,
hopefully it's not like a health thing or something, because I know he does have that health issue.
Okay, but here's one.
Okay.
Spooky Action at a Distance.
That's Lotus Plaza.
Oh damn! Nice.
And that's also like a deer hunter, right? Yeah.
Yeah. What's that guy's name? Lockett Punt.
Yeah, what a name.
All right, here's an easy one. You get this in your sleep. The Eraser.
Oh, well, that's our boy Tommy. Tommy York.
The Eraser. That album's okay. What, he plays bass or something?
Yeah, I think he plays
it's like a drum and
one.
Bass or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that first one still holds up. I don't know about the other ones.
Yeah,
do you like the smile? He into the smile at all?
You always tell me that the smile's good.
It's good, man.
But
it's pretty good.
I haven't heard it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll check them out.
New record.
Okay, here's
good.
One. Go.
Oh.
G-O. Go.
Huh.
This is a one-word guy, one-name guy.
Okay, I was going to say, is it Moby?
Close.
It's not Moby. No, go ahead. I don't think I'll get this one. It's
Jonesy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
From whatchamacallit. The fuck was that band? The fake language band.
Yeah.
Why am I blanking on that?
It's a funny name.
You shadow in the fire.
What was it? I don't know. It's been a while since I've delved into that.
Adjustability. What the hell are they called? They're huge.
I'm looking it up now.
Jesus Christ. We're getting our indie rock cred stripped.
Yeah. We'll have to cut all this out.
They had the Parentheses album.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Adrian, you should know this.
I know. I should. I listened to this record extensively.
We're keeping this all in. Sigur Rós. Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
I know, it's been a while.
Oh, it's well. Yeah, I don't know if I ever really actually delved into his solo stuff too much. Actually,
Jonesy.
Thinking about it.
Go. I heard it was okay.
I think is it Jonesy? It's probably Jonesy.
Jonesy or something. Jonesy? Yeah. Sigur Rós.
Yeah. Speaking of,
we'll do a Sigur Rós.
Oh,
we haven't done.
Yeah,
already.
We kind of. I mean, they're talk about big time. In
do
the
they
genre.
Have a 2004 album? They must.
I think they have a 2003, maybe a 2005, but maybe not a 2004.
I was thinking, yeah, it's like Parentheses. That sounds.
But what
like,
was it called? What is the language? Is it Hopelandic?
I thought it was called like Happy Spiel or something.
No, I think it's called Hope. Oh, Hopeland. Maybe that's like its real name, but it's like
Hopelandic. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, a couple more here. We'll burn through these.
Oh, hold on. It's Von Lenska.
What the fuck does that mean?
That's the name of their
fake
language.
Language
in Icelandic.
Cool.
Anyways, Sigur Rós, Victory Rose.
Okay, here's one for you. Pull hair, rub eye. Pull hair, rub eye.
Okay, the name is hitting ringing a bell, but I don't know.
So this is a collab album between with a married couple. That's a hint.
A married couple.
They're married at the time.
Were the couple in the band, the other band, together?
One of them was in it.
Okay. Is it like Divine Fits or one of those fucking bands?
No.
One of those Wolf Parade offshoots?
It's just the people's name.
Oh, like fucking like Beth and Dan or some fucking
something
shit like
and
that.
Something, yeah. I'll
oh,
just
is
get.
Is
There
it
you
like
got it.
Cyan and no, what is it? No, I'm thinking of someone else. Go ahead. Oh, is it Damon and Naomi? No.
No, it's
Fuck.
Avi Tare and
Oh,
his
Avi
wife.
Tare and
What was her name?
Doctress?
Kriya.
Oh yeah, Kriya. Okay.
Brecken. She was in
Her
Mum.
animal collective name, I believe, is Doctress. But anyway, it's Kriya
Oh,
Breckage or whatever, right?
yeah, she was in Mum, I think.
Mum? Yeah, I believe
Mum.
so. Or I think they got divorced though, didn't they? Maybe.
Yeah, I think probably because of that album sucked.
He's like, oh, I
That's
don't
the
want
album they
to.
famously released it twice, one in reverse and one
Oh
in.
yeah.
Yeah, I think I listened to it once.
Those kooksters always doing
That
weird
was like
shit.
the fucking height of my kind of indie hype machine devotion, where it's like I even listened to that album once.
Offshoots.
Yeah, I was listening to Offshoots. That's crazy. It's a waste of time. All right, here we go. Here's one. Phrases for the Young.
Oh God, that one I should definitely get, I
I'll give
feel
you a
like.
hint. Phrases is spelled
Yeah.
Phrazes.
Is that the wait, is that the Foxygen guy?
No.
No. God damn it. I know
Earlier
who.
than Foxygen.
Okay, God damn it. No,
It's
I know who it is, but I'm not gonna get it. Go ahead.
the Voids. And you know who's in that band?
Oh, Julian Casablancas.
Julian Casablancas.
I
So I was Googling, I
actually,
couldn't re
yeah, go, no, go ahead.
I was Wikipediaing Julia Casablancas because I knew he had a band. All those Strokes guys had a band at the
I
time,
think
like a
at least
spinoff.
three out of four of them had, because I know what's his
Yes,
face, the
Nikolai
guitarist.
had
Yeah, and
one.
oh yeah, Nickel Eye.
Nikolai,
Yeah.
Albert Hammond Jr., whatever he had. He had
He
a
had the solo
couple. I guess
stuff.
I heard those were supposed to be kind of good.
They actually are pretty good. Not bad,
Yeah.
but yeah.
But anyway, so I'm Googling Julian Casablancas.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, that guy's dad was like a model, ran a
Oh
model
boy.
agency. This
Yeah.
dude's dad was a fucking freak.
A perv, pederast.
Yeah,
Yeah.
he fucking dated like a 13-year-old. He
Oh
married a
yeah.
17-year-old and had like a kid with her. So like his, I think it was like, it was something like one of his kids was older than his wife or something. It was
Oh
fucking.
God.
That guy was a fucking freak.
Yeah.
Anyways, apparently there's a documentary about him you can watch on YouTube. It's called like Lover of Women or something.
Oh God.
Right, here, last one. This is a fun one.
Okay.
Rock and Roll Gangsta.
Oh, that's oh fuck.
I was just talking about this album with Caleb the other day.
Yeah, this is
Rock and Roll
evoking those
Gangsta.
knock up. Okay, just give me it. I know it's gonna be hilarious, but what is
Feel
it?
These Dreams, baby.
Oh my God.
Remember Fieldy from
Of
Korn?
all of the people, of all of the musicians from the band Korn,
Feel These
Fieldy
Dreams.
is the last person that you're gonna want to hear a record from. I also
He,
hear that he's a piece of shit, so
oh, I
fuck
wouldn't
you,
doubt that.
Fieldy.
He
Yeah.
had one of his songs on there was a semi hit. I remember it had like a music
Yeah.
video. I can't remember how it goes. It's
I
fucking
forgot.
terrible.
God, what an
Feel
awful
These
time.
Dreams.
The mid-2000s. What
But
a
well, I was talking about that album because me and Caleb were talking about Korn, and we're like, is Korn came back around where people are like,
Yeah.
Korn is good.
New metal's back around for some reason.
Korn is
Korn,
good.
Slipknot, like all these
Yeah.
artists are now like being
Yeah. I don't know.
rediscovered.
I think they're funny. I don't think they're good.
I think they got like there's a couple of Korn songs I like and a couple of Slipknot songs I like for sure, but it's
I like
like,
how they
yeah.
play guitar, like pointing their guitar straight up into the air.
Yeah, like it's like the strap is like right below their chin, right?
Yeah.
And
Like,
then like they
oh.
got the
Or it's like way below. It's like at their knees, but they're
yeah, well, that's
pointed up.
Fieldy.
So it's
Fieldy's
like
got like the
parallel with their
upright
face.
bass. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like doing upright bass with like a eight string bass
Bam,
that sounds like
bam, bam.
shit.
Yeah,
And then
feel
Monkey
these.
or whatever has got like the guitar up to his like
Monkey.
fucking nose,
They had
right?
like the contact lenses. They're like.
And then like the drummer was like the most normal looking dude. He was
And
just
I
like
think
some
he had
blonde
a.
guy.
He didn't even have a nickname. That's how
No,
normal
his
he
name was
was.
like Dave. He's
Yeah.
like David. Like, yeah, it's
Monkey.
Dave.
Didn't they have two bass players?
No, but they it was Monkey and Head were the guitarist, Fieldy the
Head.
bassist, obviously Jonathan Davis. Oh, they had the DJ. It was like
Oh
DJ,
God.
fuck, what was it, like DJ Lethal or some stupid shit like that. I'm not
One of
DJ
those
Lethal.
guys, yeah. All right.
Yeah. Anyways, that's been
Well, that was
new
it.
metal corner.
Yeah, that was the game. We
That
haven't
was
had a
fun.
game in a while. But
Yeah.
Adrian, what are we doing next? I forgot to ask about this, but I think
It's a
you have the
good
list.
question. Let me bring up the list. Let's see. Hopefully I got it handy here. I know we have a lot of good choices. Excuse me, good choices.
I think we're going back to the just some good old fashioned indie 2000 indie internet hype band.
Oh yes, okay. We can go in a couple of directions, but I think the one that we decided on is one Mr. Devendra Banhart.
Oh, nice. Which album? Rejoicing in the Hands.
That's right. You got
All
it.
right. Sounds good. Let's book it. What year is
So,
that? 03?
I want to say 02, 03, maybe even 01. Let's see.
Yeah.
Let's get that right so that the pedantic
Rejoicing
nerds.
in
The
the hands
hands.
or
How do you feel
rejoicing
about
in hands?
Devendra? You've been I can't recall. I think we were all fans of
I was into it
that
at
one
the
record.
time.
Yeah.
I like that one. Cripple Crow.
Oh, it was released in 2004. Wow,
Four,
okay.
yeah. I think he came out with two albums that year. It was like
He did.
Niño Rojo.
Yes, which is also pretty good.
Yeah, he had
But
a
we're gonna do
moment.
Rejoicing. He
He had a
did.
moment.
He's kind of back. I get emails about how he's back all the time. Got a
From
haircut,
him?
looking good. Yeah,
He's like,
well,
are you
from
still
his,
on my street team,
yeah, you're
bro?
still in my, remember when you signed up back in 2005?
Yeah, that's funny. No, that'd be interesting. Get into some freak folk.
Yeah,
Sounds
I don't think
good.
it's not our first, but it's definitely, he's
Yeah, it's been a
definitely the
minute.
probably the biggest of that genre that we've covered so far.
All right.
He's
Well,
a
that
real,
concludes
yeah.
episode 55. You guys go out there, listen to the Devendra Banhart album, and we'll meet up with you, who knows, down the line. Let me do the outro. All right. Thank you to Kiki Ontiveros for the most slapping of theme song. Thank you, Adrian, for all your stellar production work and your research. Check out our website, whackerslaps.com. Make sure to follow us on the socials at Whack or Slaps. Talk some shit via email at whackerslaps@gmail.com. For Adrian and Caleb, thank you for the voicemail. I am Noah, and this has been Whacker Slaps. And as always, Alvita Singh.
Well, I got
Say something
nothing.
funny.
Bye.